Michael Waltowski, Reel 3.
So your interrogation went on for about 3 weeks.
About 3 weeks. Mm. And all at the end of this interrogation, one phrase was perpetually being repeated, just sign and you'll be allowed to go free, you see.
Did you believe them?
Which I didn't believe. In actual fact, this woman who was in the cell with me, he used to warn me. He says, don't ever believe an inmate who is thrown into your cell, because they do it deliberately to spy on you, and they use them as witnesses later on. Well, that's a normal practice.
How old were you then?
Well, 19, that's right. And basically, I was so worn out that really and truly I was more or less prepared to die. I found it very difficult to understand when eventually later on it was mentioned that Hitler attacked the Soviet Union. And the feeling inside was, well, what am I doing here in the cell? I could be a soldier. Particularly that when I was in the cell and I could hear marching Red Army units singing songs, and I thought, how awful that I couldn't be a soldier myself fighting the Germans instead of rotting in a cell. But this interrogation did finish me off. I did sign. I didn't know what I signed, what I did. I was completely worn out, and I looked like a skeleton after this time. And eventually, when I did sign, they put us in a communal cell. And there, in this communal cell, I met my old friends, Nella, and two Sigmunds, Linskis, and of course, who appeared Nella's brother too. So what happened, as he told us, that this was a simple trick on him. The collective farm was about 3 or 4 kilometers from the railway station. And one morning, the collective farm boss, he was called the Presidatel. I always remember his name was... never mind his name. But he came to him and he said, look, I've got an important letter. Would you please deliver it to the station master? So, of course, young, his name was Pavlo, he had no choice but simply started marching towards the station. And as he told us later, obviously, that halfway there was a car. The car parked on the side of the road, and there were NKVD men. And they sort of said, well, where are you going? And he said, well, I'm going to the station to deliver this letter. The manager of the farm asked me. He said, well, pop in. And they said, we got stuck as well. We couldn't start the engine. Would you be kind enough to help us to push the car as well? So he obviously helped push the car. Well, might as well give you a lift. Well, they gave him a lift, and he landed in prison in Aktubinsk, you see. That was the trick, and put in a cell. But
had the others been tortured?
Well, they were also tortured, but we never had time to go into all details. But they were all interrogated. But I also remember when I was in a cell on my own, and they had huge metallic ovens between the two cells. And I remember when I knocked at this oven, it was metallic oven, and I could hear a voice. I put my ear into it, and it was Nella next door to my cell. Yeah. You see, she was there. She sort of, Nella. But anyway, after this interrogation, we were put in this communal cell. It was packed to utmost capacity with all nationalities imaginable, you see. And in the corner of it was a huge, like a barrel, which was called parash. So everybody used to urinate into that barrel, which was overflowing all the time. You can just imagine the scent of it all. And we were kept in that cell. I remember there were Romanians. There was a Romanian officer and so on. He was wounded or something. He looked awful. But we were kept in that cell, shoulder to shoulder, and eventually, you see, after a few days, they loaded us into a train with a special compartment for prisoners. And we went, five of us, to this town, dearest town, where we landed on arrival, and which I used for collecting my bread as well. And we were all placed again separately in a sort of local prison. And I remember my sister, Anna, she came once and she brought me some bread. And we were awaiting our trial, as we were told. So there was court, and our families from the collective farm gathered in that room, courtroom, so called, and on a podium, I remember they brought us in, and we were greeted with a screaming cry, because we all looked like skeletons, and they were all weeping, looking at us. And there was a judge. His belt, and we were allocated a defense as well, and it was supposedly a lawyer. And then the procedure started. They read the prosecutor the accusations, which were more or less along the lines that Zygmunt Hlinsky was the editor of this underground counter-revolutionary newspaper, Exile. I was the co-editor and so on, blah, blah, blah. And then the rest were helpers. But the actual accusation read was more or less as follows, if I can remember still. First, it was, you see, the editing of this underground, co-editing as far as I was accused. Then I remember accusation which was read against me that I was critical of the Soviet Union. Yes. Then I was critical of the collective farm system. Then another accusation that I was mobilizing the feelings of the Poles in order to overthrow the Soviet Union government. Then I was accused of mobilizing the feelings of other workers on the farm in order to overthrow the Soviet Union government. Then the other point was that I was a son of a Polish policeman. So that was, and there was some reference to religion made as well. And all I had on me was just a tunic and so on. And the defense came the same accusation was read to all five of us, more or less. And the defense, in the end, was judged to And then it, the judge turned to us, and I remember all of them said, "You make a small speech in Russian. Your Russian seem to be more advanced," which I did. And I turned to the judge, and I said to him that, of course, my sister told me about it when she visited me in prison, that I said to the judge, "Why is it that you are judging us in here? And at the same time, there is the Polish government in exile from London, which has been recognized by the Soviet Union. And in the city of this Aktubinsk, there is a Polish delegate negotiating the release of prisoners according to this new agreement that was signed between Sikorsky and Stalin in 1941. This was in December 41. And under this agreement, we should be released and join the Polish army being formed on the Soviet soil." The judge said, "I know nothing about it, you see." And then he read the sentences. And Zygmunt, the editor, got 10 years imprisonment. And specifically, I got 7 years imprisonment, and the rest of them got 5 years imprisonment, with the confiscation of your properties and also banning your citizens' privileges. And we were given half an hour to meet our families. Well, you can imagine the meeting of families during that half an hour. And then we were loaded on a truck, Red Army truck, and taken about 25 kilometers from this Durun railway station to Temir prison. Well, it was a prison which was like a fortress, and it was surrounded by walls, and in the corners you had the sentries with guns, and all along the wall were like railings that the dogs were running all the time. And we were placed in a communal cell, which I remember consisted of all sorts of people. There were Russian intellectuals, professors, murderers, and very soon we were acquainted with the rule and regulation prevalent and applicable to the life in the cell, how to behave and so on. And if you pinched anybody's ration of bread, you would be murdered by the rest of them. But the food was a little bit improved now, that we used to get a chunk of bread for breakfast, and at lunchtime we used to get a tiny little dish of some gruel, and on top was a cube of 1 square inch of meat, you see. And at night we used to get, again, so-called tea, you see, which was really boiled water, more or less. But in this cell we were kept for some time, I don't remember how long, and being bored stiff, we started planning to do something with ourselves. First, there was one fellow who managed to get a tiny piece of metal from those metallic stoves in the cell, and it took him a couple of weeks to sharpen it on the mug, and eventually he used it as a razor. And he was shaving people, shaving the hair, which took normally, I think, about 2 weeks before then he managed to shave the hair. Then I fell into it. How could we possibly create playing cards. We were, by the way, allowed to get some writing paper to send a petition, which we did, asking for release from the prison on the grounds of Polyrama, blah, blah, being formed and so on. But at the same time, when we were given more of this writing, we decided to create playing cards, which was quite an interesting really procedure, because first we had this paper, and to glue it, to stiffen it up, the fellow used to put bread through some piece of material, and underneath it was a gluey stuff which was used as glue, you see. Then this fellow with this razor cut it into the shape of cards. Then there was another one who managed also with this one razor in the whole cell the shapes of the cards, you know, diamond, so on and so on. And he also managed to use this by creating a sort of a paint by burning a tiny piece of rubber somewhere they got, and used that burning rubber to create the shapes of diamond and so on for the cards. But then the security men came along, and I was involved in it very much, and I was punished for it. I was punished. They put me in a punishment cell, which is a tiny little room with water underneath and cockroaches, millions of them on the walls. And I was standing there, I think for 2 days or more. I was completely finished, really, when they released me from it. And I was brought back to my cell. And on one occasion, I remember my sister came. She hired a donkey, and she marched 25 kilometers with 2 sacks of dried bread for us. But it was a period which was creating a change. We were called, five of us. Wait a minute, that's right, five of us. We were called to the boss of the prison, to his office, and very politely said, sit down, which was rather suspicious, as a matter of fact. And he started reading a note that it was decided to release you from prison. Of course, we didn't believe it at all. And you will be freed, but at the same time, there is a note, we must point out to you how you must be grateful to the great Stalin for allowing you to be freed after committing counter-revolutionary deeds and so on. And when you are released, you must serve the communist cause and Stalinist cause as well, you know, all communist causes. And I remember they gave us back our belongings, which, well, can imagine what sort of belongings we had. And they opened the huge gate and said, you are free. And we sort of looked at each other, couldn't believe. We felt it was some sort of a trick again. You see, this is what it left for the rest of my lifetime, a mark that I find it very difficult to trust anybody, you see. Because, and then we started marching. There was in this Timir settlement, there was a little restaurant, or some sort of a restaurant. It wasn't called restaurant, it was like a cafeteria or something. And we had a meal there, and it was a camel meat. And believe me, I have never had a better meal in my life eating that camel meat. Actually, camel meat must be quite good as well. Why not? And we marched all along 25 kilometers, and then about halfway, if I can remember, suddenly Red Army trucks came along, and they shouted, "Do you want the left?" But we were suspicious, you know. Yes, we got on, and they took us to the station, and I remember the conversation I had. I said, "Well, we've just been released for counter-revolutionary activities and so on." And to my absolute complete surprise, this Red Army chap, in the most forceful manner, started denunciation of Stalin, communism. And of course, to me, I thought, he's just trying to get me into it again, you see. I just simply didn't believe him. But that's what he did. And whether it was genuine or not, I don't know. But yeah, anyway, we got to the station and we jumped on the train without any tickets or anything. The train luckily slowed down a little bit, didn't stop. And I remember I jumped and rolled over and over and somehow didn't hurt myself too much. But we walked back to our collective.
Michael Waltowski, end of Reel 3. Michael Waltowski, Reel 3.